Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. There is a story on the Facebook page I want you to go take a look at, only because, and you know I've been keeping you apprised of everything that's happening in Sacramento, California. Why does California keep coming up today? It's a story of, it's a national story. It's the story of Stephon Clark, this 22-year-old who was shot by police officers. I've covered this three or four different times now. And he was running across neighborhoods and backyards and everything as police were looking for whoever was vandalizing cars. And so he ends up in his grandmother's backyard. He's only holding a cell phone. And the police say to him, and it's dark, it's in the backyard, and the police can't really see. And the police say to Stephon Clark, stop. He does not stop. Instead, this unarmed, quote unquote, unarmed black man continues to walk towards police, who then shoot him 20 times. And down he goes. And so to hear the police say it, apparently now they think, or they thought, that the cell phone that he was holding in his hand was actually a gun. But it wasn't a gun. But the reason why I want you to go, said all my piece on this whole thing, but the reason why I want you to go take a look at the Facebook page is because there is one particular picture, and it's really interesting because it's a picture of, I believe that it is the brother of Stephon Clark. His name is Stevante Clark, and he ended up busting into some sort of a city council meeting. I think it was last night or earlier this week. Today's Wednesday, so Tuesday. So it was last night. And they're talking about all things regarding the city of Sacramento. And they're probably more than likely talking about the situation regarding the death of this guy, Stephon Clark, at the hands of police. And so Stevante Clark, the angst-ridden brother, walks into the courtroom, bursts into the meeting room, and he's jumping on tables, and he's basically acting incredibly belligerent. But one of the things that he does, after telling the people in the audience to shut the F up, by the way, because he wanted to talk, and he wanted to talk about the failures by city authorities, which we're going to get into that in a second. But I think one of the things that somebody did was they held up a cell phone like it was a gun. Now, the reason why I bring that up is because as I was kind of perusing the story, I looked at that particular picture, and I thought, at very first quick glance, I thought, well, why is that person holding a gun inside the council meeting? In other words, it looked like a gun to me. The guy was holding his cell phone. Now, what he was trying to say, the point of holding the cell phone as a gun, he was trying to say, well, this is what the guy was actually holding, and it was not a gun. It was a cell phone. Therefore, he shouldn't have been shot. What I'm saying is that upon first glance with me, when I even saw the picture, it looked like the guy was holding a gun because he was standing in the aiming position and so forth. Now, for the record, Stephon Clark, when he was shot dead, he was not in the aiming position. He was walking towards the officers after they told him to stop. You know, I spoke to Kathy Hinners, and I've heard from other police officers as well. And one of the things that they said is that this was a justifiable killing. And all the experts that I've spoken to and heard from all say that even though it's tragic, it was justified. There's a lot of folks, though, in Sacramento who don't think so. But one of the things that, as Stevante Clark is screaming at the top of his lungs to tell the audience members to shut the F up because he's got something to say, urging the audience to chant his brother's name before grabbing the microphone to make an impromptu speech. And he said, if you really love me, because he asked the audience, this is what had to be kind of weird, asking the audience, do you love me? To cries of yes. Well, if you really love me, he said, my brother just got shot. He says, the mayor and the city of Sacramento have failed. You hear me? He continued. He said, the rent is too high. The gang banging has to stop, and the poverty is uncontrollable. Clark even called out Mayor Daryl Steinberg by name, adding, he has no emotion, before adding, the cops want to kill me because I know they're probably sick of this S right now. Clark, of course, also accused the press of trying to, quote, exploit our pain, and ended his 5-minute allocated time by saying, if you're not black, you're white. Okay. The council adjourned for roughly 15 minutes following the disruption. Then, of course, there was demonstrations again. Later on in the evening for the Sacramento Kings basketball game, where the demonstrators blocked fans from entering the NBA arena as the Sacramento Kings game began. I'm trying to figure out, why is it, are these protesters, Bill, Google, maybe you're better at Google than I am. Is there a reason why these demonstrators are targeting the Sacramento Kings? Because it doesn't make any sense. Unless the Sacramento Kings are somehow, you know, I don't know, funding the police department or whatever it is. I don't understand why it is that these demonstrators have an ire with their hometown basketball team. I just don't understand. So now the problem in Sacramento is that the Kings, nobody wants to go to their basketball games because they're going to be met with these moronic protesters. Now, look, if you want to be upset, that's fine. Be upset. If you want to protest the police station in a responsible way with no violence, well, then that's what you ought to do. But some of the things that Stephon Clark said, and I don't want to go on and on about this, but some of the things that Stephon Clark said, the rent is too high. Okay, well, you know what? The rent is high everywhere. You move. You do what you need to do. The gang banging has to stop. Well, that's, you know, what do you want the mayor to do about that? The police are trying to do what they can do to, I'm sure, stop the gang banging. But ultimately, that's going to be up to the gang bangers themselves. If they want to gang bang, they're going to gang bang. Seems to me like this dude, Stevante Clark, if he wants the gang banging to stop, he has to go speak to the gang bangers. He says the poverty there in Sacramento, I guess, is uncontrollable. Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. You know, there's jobs aplenty out there these days. And so if you want to go get a job and you want to go find a better paying job, then that's what you need to do. But, you know, maybe if the gang banging were to stop and some of these communities worked to improve their communities, then jobs would come into the communities, which, by the way, that is what President Trump has been trying to do. That's one of the damn things that he has been focusing on.
The best I can find here is that it looks like the team was supportive of the protests and they went to the arena because they weren't going to be rejected or repudiated for doing that by the team.
That makes even less sense then, because if the Kings supported the protests, well, then the protesters go to the arena where the basketball team plays and they are heckling and mocking and preventing people from going into the game. So therefore, what they're doing is they're penalizing the Kings.
Right.
I'm not missing anything, right?
It's Black Lives Matter logic.
That's like BLM logic, which is illogical. So I don't get it. Anyway, I'm sorry, I don't mean to dismiss this whole thing, but when something is as illogical as we just said, the Black Lives Matter logic is illogical, there's nothing else you can say about this. I'd say to Stevante Clark and unfortunately the people that are, you know, complaining about the situation in Sacramento. Again, a lot of these are self-fulfilling. You want the gang banging to stop? Go talk to the gangs. It's like the people that say, the police, you know, they're spending too much time in these neighborhoods where the gangs are. It's like, okay, well then you want the police to go away? It's like in Baltimore. I've been talking about Baltimore for how long now? You got the situation in Baltimore where you had the whole Freddie Gray thing, and then you had the protests after Freddie Gray. So then people are saying, oh, it's the police's fault. They spend way too much time in Baltimore. It's racist is what it is. All right. So the police say, well, then screw you. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to go patrol other places that want us around. Then all of a sudden, murder starts skyrocketing and crime starts skyrocketing in Baltimore. And then everybody wants to know where the police are. I mean, they can't win. It just it's maddening is what it is. Speaking of which, see this? Walmart is apparently going to remove the magazine Cosmopolitan from its checkout lines. You can read about this on the Dan Mandy Show Facebook page. But I guess apparently now there is this group. It is the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. And they are an organization that, for whatever reason, has been obsessing over Cosmopolitan magazine for a long time, saying it's porn. And so now they've been pressuring Walmart, because, you know, when you go into any store and you got, you know, various and sundry magazines there at the checkout counter, and you got sometimes the National Enquirer, apparently the Cosmopolitan magazine has been up there as well. Well, now Walmart has been pressured to pull Cosmopolitan magazine from the checkout lines because of the fact that this group, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, says that it's porn. The retail giants are removing the monthly women's fashion magazine from checkout lines at 5,000 stores across the country, although the magazine will still be available for purchase. Now, for the record, Walmart can do whatever they damn well please. But, I mean, if this National Center on Sexual Exploitation thinks that a Cosmopolitan magazine is porn, I mean, we had the conversation earlier this week with Pamela, who's broadcasting today from a super secret undisclosed location. I don't see where they can say that this is porn. Now, is it, you know, very women and very suggestive tops? And, you know, they got well, they don't leave a lot to, how do I say this, Bell? Low cut dresses and shirts and that kind of thing. They have breasts showing.
It's got a lot of adult content in it, but it's not meant to be purient.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, they're revealing shirts and everything, but they're not showing anything that you certainly don't see in a bathing suit. You know, for example, Sports Illustrated and the, you know, some of these various swimsuit models and so forth. So apparently what they're saying now is that they're trying to protect children from being exposed to, quote, graphic and often degrading and offensive material. Now, I guess what they do in Cosmopolitan, you know what, if there's any women listening, which I know there are, 615-737-WWTN, you tell me, is Cosmopolitan a porn? Does it offer degrading and offensive material? Now, what they're saying is that this organization, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, they're saying that this is what real change looks like in our hashtag MeToo culture. And this particular company, this particular group, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, is proud to work with a major corporation like Walmart to combat sexually exploitative influences in our society. I would say that there is so much out there that is sexually exploitative. I find it curious that they're focusing on Cosmopolitan. Now, I had one person say to me, well, you know, they have sex tips and sex advice and these kinds of things, relationship advice as well. Now, for the record, I've never read Cosmopolitan, but, you know, I've seen what's on the internet and I've seen some of the things that are out there. And you know what? Sounds to me like Cosmo is actually, I would say, somewhat tame. Anyway, yeah, she says this is where real change looks like in our hashtag MeToo culture. Oh, by the way, the other thing that I would say is, and I've always said this, you know, whether it's Playboy magazine or whatever it is, you know, these women who pose for these magazines, you know, that's a job. That's their livelihood. And so if Cosmopolitan, if they start seeing some sort of a decline in their sales, well, then they might just go under. And if they go under, well, then some of these models, they're going to have less work. It is interesting, too. Right? Because women, they make the choices to pose for these magazines, whether it's Playboy or Cosmo or whatever it is. And sales very well could go down. But I do find it fascinating that a lot of folks are putting porn stars these days up on pedestals. But Cosmo is now porn and incredibly bad. It seems to me that this whole thing is kind of a stretch. And it would seem to me like you have a lot more to deal with these days other than Cosmo. It's also interesting that, you know, some people will say, oh, well, women who pose for Playboy or women that pose for Cosmo or cheerleaders and so forth, it is exploiting women. So some people will say, well, this is women who are empowered to use their bodies in a way that they are choosing to use their bodies. And it's empowering for a woman to do this. And that is also their choice. But then other people say, well, no, they should not be allowed to do that. That is exploitive. Let's see what Heather has to say on WTN in Nashville. Heather, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
So you tell me, you think Cosmo is porn?
Well, it's not naked pictures, but if you read a lot of the articles, it's very, it's very sexual in nature. For instance, hot 10 new sex tips. I mean, you're standing in line and that's what's on the cover, or 10 must read tips for first time sex. I mean, that's, I would say, encouraging teenagers to read and have sex.
Sure.
You know? So it's very suggestive.
If that is on the front cover, that's on the front cover of Cosmo?
Yeah, actually, the 10 must-read tips for first-time sex is their opening page on their website. The other one, the hot 10 hot tips for hot sex, is on the cover.
Okay.
I mean, stuff like that all the time. It seems like Kroger put a cover. They kept it out, but they put a cover over it for a while so that you couldn't read all of that.
Right.
You could buy the magazine, but it wasn't just open for any eyes to see.
Okay. Thank you very much, Heather. Appreciate the call. I don't even know how I can read this, but I'm going to. Hey, Dan. This is from Holly. I'm listening to you in the car line at school picking up my second grade daughter. Cosmopolitan is absolutely pornography. Talks about various ways to do various sexual acts. She says, I do not want my daughter reading, and they have pictures of sexual positions, etc. So, you know, Holly says, absolutely is porn. Let's see what Lisa in Mount Juliet has to say. Hey, Lisa, you are on with Dan Mandis. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
There was something that I saw recently about Cosmo. They have either a teen, I think they have a teen magazine, and they had diagrams explicitly explaining how to perform a certain sexual act.
Diagrams?
And that's where it stemmed from. And I remember being outraged and everyone calling for them to pull it. So I'm trying to Google it right now and I can't find it, but they were like, yeah. Diagrams explaining how to do a certain one.
Yeah.
Safely.
I think we got, I thank you, Lisa. I appreciate it. Well, this has turned awkward. Somebody sent me a note on Facebook. Cosmopolitan is not even close to porn. See, this is interesting. What's fascinating is everybody's got their own opinion on what exactly Cosmo does, because it sounds like, according to Lisa and I think it was Heather, they said that it is either pornography or it's at the very least very much adult. And so this one lady says, a Cosmopolitan is not even close to porn. Girls can read it and get advice, which is what we just heard from Lisa, from it, that they might be too embarrassed to ask family and friends. She says it has articles about sex and different positions to try, personal hygiene, safe sex, birth control advice. Says that group is doing a disservice to young women who still actually buy and read magazines. That's a very good point. I don't know if a lot of...
I can agree with both of them that if I were a parent, which I'm not, but if right. I were, I don't think I would want my daughter reading that magazine, because I do think it's pretty adult. But as far as it being pornography and right. designed to be purient, I wouldn't call it pornography. It's definitely adult. But yeah. If there's a takeaway from this discussion whatsoever, it's I need to start reading Cosmo.
Okay, it's 2:24 on Super Talk. You know what? I was going to go down that road, Bell, and I think I'm just going to leave that alone. It's 2:24. You've been time checked on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is. The Dan Mandis Show. Apparently now I'm getting, good Lord. See, another guy says it's not porn, it's just rated R. Hey, Dan, my wife and I spoke about this a long time ago. You can't find an issue that doesn't talk about sex and so on and so forth. Here's something else that I'd much rather talk about from WSMV. Representative David Byrd has now issued a statement denying the allegations of sexual misconduct by three former players when they were teens. We will pick up on that story straight ahead on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 239 Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986. 615-737-WWTN. Well, it feels like I have kind of got all these various stories I want to talk about, and I just have so little time. I got one segment left, so let's get right to it. First of all, headline Fox News. Despite the media narrative, a study shows that teenagers made up just 10% of the March for Our Lives crowd. Now, we all know about the March for Our Lives. We all know about the narrative that the media has been trying to put forth. We all know about the David Hoggs and the Emma Gonzalez and all these various teenagers who are through, I think it's their own narcissistic needs, have taken on this agenda. As we all know, they are being used by the left. I don't want to bore you with that conversation yet again. I've been having that conversation for weeks. But this is something new. A university professor studying large-scale Trump-era protests in Washington says the media is giving the wrong impression about who made up the crowd during last week's anti-gun March for Our Lives demonstration. This is a guy from the University of Maryland. He's a sociology professor, and I guess what he does is he studies crowd sizes. And he also studies who is in a crowd. My research, he says, tells a different story about those who participated in the March for Our Lives. And it's far more complicated and less well-packaged for prime time. The study indicates that while news coverage focused on the teenagers marching for gun control in the wake of last month's shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, 90% of the crowd was actually adults. She said the average age of adults in the crowd was just under 49 years old. In other words, who did you see up at the podiums? Who did you see on TV? It was all the teenagers. But who was really there? Adults bought and paid for by George Soros. Fisher continues on, contrary to what's been reported in many media accounts, the D.C. March for Our Lives crowd was not primarily made up of teenagers. Only about 10% of the participants were under 18 years of age. The other thing I would ask is, when you looked at all of these various protests and demonstrations across the country, how many of these folks actually lived in that particular town? Because we know that the left, what they like to do is they like to import protesters from other places. We saw that in Charlottesville. Fisher said her team sampled 256 people who were randomly selected, and her research is going to become a book titled American Resistance, and it will be published after the midterm elections. Fisher also expressed skepticism, by the way, that all those who showed up to the march were there primarily because of their views on guns. Some, she said, came for entertainment. Yeah. Who's surprised by that? The report says the March for Our Lives had the allure of a free concert. You know, that's so true, isn't it? You know, when you're a kid, think about this. There's a couple of different things to talk about here, right? You've got the fact that, you know, kids, generally speaking, they can be lemmings anyway. Well, we can all, good Lord, the American people can be lemmings, generally speaking. But when you're a kid, what do? You glom onto the crowd. You glom onto the cool kids. And so I think for a lot of these students who are, the 10% of those that were actually teenagers at some of these events, what they're doing is they're taking part of something that they really don't know a lot about. But again, it's all about being a part of something, whether they believe it or not. Because kids, what they want to do when they're teenagers is they just want to belong, right? And if they just want to belong, well, then what are they going to do? They're going to go along with the David Gonzalez's or the Emma Gonzalez and the David Hoggs of the world. As Phil says, David Camera Hogg. She says the March for Our Lives had the allure of a free concert. In fact, the event's website maintained a list of performers but never listed the speakers. Isn't that interesting? But it's one thing to turn out and watch some of these various performers and quite another to vote in the midterm elections in November. But you know what I say about that whole thing. This is less about the gun and more an attempt by the left to cultivate a whole bunch of new voters in 2020 and 2018, depending on how old some of these folks are. But essentially, it's about turning these students against Republicans and against conservatives. So that's one story that we're following for you. Also, it would appear now that this just came out. David Byrd. We've been talking about David Byrd. He is this Republican out of Waynesboro, and he has now been accused of sexual misconduct some 30 years ago. Now, Bell, I'm going to need some audio, if you would, kind sir, because I'm going to play you some of this audio from WSMV, the I-Team. And so what they did was somebody decided to turn in this guy after 30 years and say, yeah, Representative David Byrd, when he was a basketball coach for Wayne County High School, he fondled 15 and 16-year-old girls. At least that is the accusation. So now you got Beth Harwell and also Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally both asking for Byrd to resign. And he has now responded, saying, first, let me say that I have done nothing wrong or inappropriate during my term as state representative for the 71st District, which I proudly serve. He says, I am disappointed that Speaker Harwell so quickly, publicly turned her back on me, but understand, he says, her political posture. Now, here's the story. I'm just going to very briefly recap because I know a lot of folks heard the first hour, but you've got three women, Christy Rice, Robbie Kane, and a third that is anonymous. And they were interviewed by the I-Team on Channel 4 and have put a montage of what these accusations are against David Byrd way back 30 years ago, again, when he was a basketball coach at Wayne County High School.
He was like, you owe me. You owe me. I've been thinking about what I want. I want to see you naked.
Where did he touch you?
My breast and below the belt as well.
He positioned himself to where his penis was between my butt cheeks. And he started rubbing my back. He put his hands under my shirt to rub me. And he went to the sides of my breast, underneath my arm.
She claims Byrd tried to touch her genital area.
Yeah. His words were, I want you to feel how you make me feel. I want you to feel it throbbing.
Why come out more than 30 years later?
Well, the reason why she's coming out 30 years later, she said part of it is the whole hashtag MeToo movement. The other is that she says that I just couldn't stay quiet any longer. Now, typically these things, when it's accusations from 30 years ago, it's he said, she said, and there's no real proof. But one of the victims actually recorded a telephone conversation between State Representative David Byrd and her, in which she talked about what happened many years ago. Now, it's important to note that so far we haven't heard any specific allegations from David Byrd in this particular phone call from the victim. So he's apologizing profusely to this person on the phone. It's Christy Rice on the phone. And he's apologizing to her profusely, but we don't ever really get an idea as to what exactly the apology is all about.
I can promise you one thing, that I have been so sorry.
And he had no idea that he was being recorded.
I mean, I've lived with that, and you don't know how hard it has been for me.
David, you know exactly what happened between me and you. I mean, that's not a question. I don't know what happened between the others.
Well, right now, there's no others. I wish I had a do-over, because I promise you I would have corrected that, and that would never happen. I hope you believe me when I say that, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that I think about it all the time, and I always ask forgiveness for it, and I hope he forgives me. And it's just one of the things that I've really beat myself up, and I don't know if you believe that or not, but I do. I mean, all the time. this call hadn't been a Sunday gone by when I, you know, doing my communion and everything, and I'm asking for forgiveness of sins, my sins. You know, that's one of the things that that I do.
Now, there's a secret recording between State Rep. David Byrd, Republican out of Waynesboro, and Christy Rice, one of his alleged victims. And again, he says that I've done nothing wrong. He continues on in his statement. These recent allegations of inappropriate contact never before made date back over three decades ago and are disheartening to me and my family. He continued, one must question the motives of these three former students out of the hundreds of students that he has coached. And he was a coach. I think he was also the principal there at Wayne County High School many years ago before he went on to become a state lawmaker. So there's a lot to talk about here, and I know this is not even close to the end of this conversation. I think it's probably only begun. By the way, there is a political aspect to this as well. Our friends over at the Tennessee Star, they're saying that this could be a political hit job on the part of someone. Here's what they say, because as I just reported to you, Speaker Beth Harwell is now calling on David Byrd to resign. Now, apparently, there was a bit of a disagreement over a bill that Byrd was sponsoring that would allow arming of teachers after the shooting in Parkview, Florida. And so now we have a situation where Byrd's bill to allow trained teachers to be armed. I guess Beth Harwell asked him to drop the bill to arm teachers, and he refused to do so. And so now what they're saying is that the surfacing of these charges, combined with Harwell's quote-unquote sudden rush to call for Byrd's resignation, is nothing but a political hit job on her part, according to some sources there within telling the Tennessee Star. And they talk about Harwell's so-called rush to judgment came without a hearing, without hearing Byrd's side of the story or availing Byrd of the investigative process, which is the right, by the way, of any member of the state legislature against whom an ethical misconduct charge has been filed. And so the Star can't determine whether or not there has been any misconduct charges, but so far not seeing any that have been filed against Representative Byrd through the appropriate office of the Tennessee House of Representatives. But again, this happened 30 years ago, and for Representative Byrd, he says, well, you know, Beth Harwell, she was awfully quick to ask me to resign without hearing either my side of the story or all of the facts. And again, as it relates to the phone call from the audio that I just played for you, they're really, again, it's all seems rather vague. It's clear that he's apologizing, and he's apologizing for something. He's falling all over himself apologizing. But the question is, what are these specific allegations? I don't know if this phone call, I'm not sure if there is any more to the phone call that folks need to hear, but that is what WSMV so far has put on their website. So this, again, is a conversation that will continue. It is 2:52 on WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. A Senate committee rejects in-state tuition for illegals, while a House committee advances a medical marijuana bill. These stories and more coming up at 3 on WTN.
2:58 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandy Show, and it is the end of this show. And not a moment too soon. Looking forward already, though, to tomorrow when I can return. But Phil Valentine is up next. If you'd like to send me an email, you can. Dan at 99.7WTN.com. You can also find me on Facebook and also Twitter at Dan Mandy Show. We will see you tomorrow right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.